Salutations, Mets fans. Welcome to this week's edition of For All You Kids Out There, a Mets Adjacent Baseball Prospectus Podcast. I'm your host, Jeffrey Paternostra. With me once again this week is Jarrett Seidler. Jarrett, how was your recessed lighting exposed beam and brick brunch today?
It wasn't brunch, it was dinner, man.
Was it? Oh yeah, I forget you're 2 hours ahead of me. I don't remember. I've had the kid since Wednesday until my wife got back today. So I don't have no sense of time when you send me messages. So
it was nice. Mm. It was it was exactly what you did.
Exactly what you expect.
Yeah.
Was there butternut squash ravioli? It seems like a place that would do butternut squash ravioli.
I don't know if they had it. I had a veggie burger. Mm-hmm. They had their St. Patrick's Day menu out already, so Kate had some type of corned beef and something or other.
Year-round corned beef is always good.
Yeah.
This is episode 399 for all you kids out there. And so here's what happened, folks. Let's see. I have a date for this. I do. Tuesday, February 21st, I messaged Thomas Henderson to ask him what position preview he wanted on the pod. And he said, if you like starting pitcher or catcher, will be fun. And my response was, catcher is part of infield this year. I am not doing five. Well, folks, and Thomas even previewed it last week, right? I think we started, you said we were going to come back to catcher. We never came back to catcher. It's episode 399. We're coming back to catcher, Thomas.
We have come back to catcher.
Yes. The usually laser-focused and well-organized season preview that you've come to expect after 7 years of For All You Kids Out There. Thomas, you prefaced by saying you had some hot takes for catcher.
It's not a hot take, but I don't really understand what they did at catcher this year. I understand the rest of the positions. I get it. They replaced DeGrom with Verlander. They replaced Bassett with Senga. Makes sense. The bullpen, they did a great job in my opinion. They got a lot of back end guys. They re-signed Diaz. They built more depth. Mm-hmm. But then catcher, they signed Omar Narváez for 2 years and then extended Nito for 2 years when you have the best catching prospect in baseball. Mm-hmm. And I understand he's young and I understand that he needs to work on his catching. But also,
I'm reliably informed by his neck tattoo that he's the best.
Exactly. It says it right on him. I mean, what are you supposed to do with that information? But I don't really know. I don't know how you call they're going to call him up this year, and it's going to be a weird bench when they do, because with the way that everything is set up on their roster, Nito and Narváez are an easy platoon. That makes sense. Whenever Alvarez gets called up, Nito gets asked out, and Alvarez is going to catch against lefties. But then against righties, is he not going to play? Is he going to, if he can't DH because you have Vogel back, if you're going to then catch him all the time, then you have two catchers on your roster who aren't playing. So I don't really know what I understand wanting to take Alvarez, let Alvarez come along slowly, but also now he's just, I don't know how he's going to get on the roster this year. And I'm sure he will. And then someone's going to get hurt or Nito's not going to hit.
Sure.
But with the Nito, you didn't have to extend Nito then. You could have just not extended him and agreed to a 1 year arbitration thing and then let him go at the end of the year and have Alvarez be the starter and Narváez be the backup and we're all happy. You know, it's just a weird roster construction they have now with this specific position because the benches are so small with the DH and how everyone's running their rosters now.
So I think we have to unpack this. We got to go back to last week and play the spring training games for the last week or so. Man, it sure looks like Brett Beatty might hit his way onto this roster. At which point you push, Eduardo Escobar into that right-handed DH spot, which is going to be a little bit harder to, I think, massage if Alvarez goes to AAA and starts hitting 270 with power. I mean, so Jarrett and I say this all the time, right? Don't listen to what a team says about a prospect. Listen to what they do with him. And they have very clearly blocked Francisco Alvarez for the next 2 years.
Yeah, that's what it's. I don't want to say they want to trade him or something, but
it's weird. Right? He's only 20 is the thing, too. So it's, or 20 will be 21 this year. So it is not a big deal on one level, but also it's a bit of an odd thing to do for the look. I mean, I think we actually ended up the high source on Alvarez, which is hilarious to me. But even and we faded him a little bit too because of the ankle injury and I think some other stuff. And he's already back catching, so I don't think it was a significant ankle injury. Who knows? I guess that'll have to play out. But even the people that faded him have him as, like, at the back of the top 10, like, an elite prospect in baseball right now.
Yes.
So, I don't
know. And
the
thing is, he could only catch. Like, he's too short to be a first baseman, yeah. Really.
He's too slow to play a corner outfield, right?
Yeah, he's not going to go all Pablo Sandoval and play third base. Like, that's just not – and if that was the option, then Beatty is is hitting his way onto the roster right now. So, yeah. There's your third baseman. It's – at that point, then he's a DH prospect, but they have DH extremely wrapped up mm-hmm. with Ruff still being here, and Vogelbach is going to play against righties, which is most of the people you're going to be facing anyway, and he should. Vogelbach's a very good hitter against righties. I'm not saying he shouldn't, but I just don't see a way he plays much this year unless someone gets hurt or Narvaez sucks again or Nito sucks, you know? Like, and that's possible. I'm not saying those guys are amazing.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of, like... I know Narvaez has played, like, he played today, and I watched some of this game, although not particularly closely. But, like, he's just one of those catchers where I don't think I've, like, ever watched him take an at-bat. Like, I probably have, but he just has not registered with me at any point in time, right?
He's like, absolutely
I know what he is. It's a, you know, he's an interesting developmental story defensively. He's never really had the good offensive season and the good defensive season. I think outside of, like, 2020 in the shortened year. It feels like a little James McCann-ish, obviously not as significant an outlay in money. I think he's a little bit better track record, at least offensively, than McCann, but
he's a better catcher too. Like,
he might be at this point, but it's just like, I don't know, man. It's so weird to me. Like, I think between like, so the thing is like between Narvaez and Nito, I think they've created like what, like a 2.5 win catching platoon, something like that, which is fine and certainly better than what they had with McCann and Nito. But it just seems like Francisco Alvarez right there. Like, this isn't, like, either you think you can, like, I don't know, man.
And when they were ostensibly gonna block Beatty with Correa, but that's Carlos Correa. Like,
yeah, that's fine. Whatever.
If Will Smith is a free agent, then sure, I'm blocking Alvarez. You know what I mean? You'll figure it out. But they're blocking him with Omar Narvaez and Tomas Nito. And
they could have blocked him with JT Realmuto when they chose
that. Yeah, exactly. Because everyone was freaking out that year that they couldn't sign Realmuto because Alvarez is coming, and then here we are. They signed Omar Narvaez instead. You know what I mean? Oh. And so they're not. It's not a terrible catching situation, but it's not a good one either, I don't think. So
it's a pretty significant downside risk still too. So without a ton of upside.
Yeah. Like, the upside is they're fine, but the downside is it's almost James McCann again. Just there's a more clear platoon. I don't know. Like, it makes me kind of think the Mets don't believe in him a little bit, or the Mets don't think he could catch and he's going to be only a DH. And then that there's a cascading effect to that. And then why do you sign Tommy? Well, I guess you sign Tommy Pham to be the fourth outfielder, but if they do the Beatty thing and Escobar is DH, like you said, Escobar is not going to sit on the bench 5 days a week.
No, they'll get him 3 or 4 days between you.
And
I mean,
and
they
you
should,
do
they
that.
Should to an extent be rotating fairly heavily given Starling Marte is coming off both his groins having operations and, you know, they like to rest Canna a lot. They probably should rest McNeil a fair bit. So,
yeah,
there's ways to make this work, right?
It's just, and I don't even think it's a Buck thing so much because I think Buck did a pretty good job of that last year, even sometimes to the detriment.
I think they're going to prescribe to a certain extent who plays or who gets days off when. That's fine.
Yeah, because like there were times where Buck would be like, Travis Jankowski's playing because we need to give Canna a day and. That probably got kind of to the finish line, but also
you Lorenzo Cedrola this year, obviously, since he's playing every game
and hitting home runs.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's just It's the Narvaez signing. I think they nailed most of the offseason and ended it on a really sour note with Correa.
It's not even a bad, like, for the years and money, it's fine, right? It's just...
No, it's just, it's weird. It's weird. It didn't make sense to me when they did it, mm-hmm. because I figured that they were just going to let Alvarez cook.
It's movable, but it's also, nobody else was signing, like, Omar Narvaez. Like, who else was signing Omar Narvaez that deal?
And then you could just DFA him and eat the money, but why? Yeah. Like, what's the point? If Alvarez is truly a top 10 prospect in baseball, you wouldn't, if you think you that, like, you don't do that.
Right. You know, the Diamondbacks, who just, I mean, that's the little difference. They traded for somebody, I guess, but they didn't, and they wouldn't have gone out and signed Narvaez to block, like, Gabriel Moreno or whatever. Or, like, you know, who else is coming? Like, the, you know, this, the Cardinal, I don't know if Jordan Walker is going to make the Cardinals. He probably looks like he should make the Cardinals. But, you know, they're also not going to just sign, like, Jock Peterson or whatever to block
Jordan Walker. And Nolan Gorman. Like, they're going to let the kids, they're going to
let the kids play him.
Yeah, let the kids play, because that's the upside.
Mm-hmm.
It just felt strange to me always. And I was waiting for the other shoe to drop with it, and then they extended Nito. And I was like, oh, okay. Sure.
It's going to make sense that Narvaez, you know, can be a starting catcher if you want somebody that's like a backup plan in case Alvarez doesn't hit or doesn't, you know, struggles defensively, and you want to DH him a little bit more. You want a better, you know, 80, 90 game starter than Nito backstopping him.
Yeah,
but then they also extended Tomas Nito for 2 years, which, I mean, it's fine. But again, it's fine for his skill set. You can eat the money. It's, but, like, nobody's trading for Tomas Nito, right? I mean, I guess somebody traded for James McCann.
People are absolutely trading for Tomas Nito.
I suppose.
I don't really understand why it's not Nito and Alvarez, to be honest with you.
I think because they were worried about the risk they'd have to end up playing Nito at catcher pretty much every day if Alvarez struggles with the bat or the glove. Because there's, like, a thing, right? If he's, like, I think Alvarez will be, I don't think Alvarez will be noticeably bad defensively.
I think it's going to look really bad and people aren't going to like it. Like, I think.
I don't think you'll really, maybe, but I'm saying.
I don't know. He looks stiff to me, but it's not.
He is. Like, but I mean, if he was like really, if he was like 10 runs bad at catcher or whatever, like, you're going to notice that. That's going to stick out more than Eduardo Escobar being 10 runs. Because you see it, like, he touches the ball on every pitch, more or less, right? Like, Escobar, it's like the little plays. It's like one play doesn't make a week or whatever that adds up over the course of a season. And with Alvarez, it's just like, I mean, it's literally front and center every game. When you have a bad defensive catcher back there. And, like, we watched James McCann. You, Thomas, sent me, like, multiple Slack messages about James McCann trying to frame low strikes
over
the last 2 years. So you notice these things, right?
Like, it's just, you look at it and he just, it's like, how would you, you're a professional catcher. Like, I got taught that in bullshit travel leagues. You know what I mean?
Have you ever seen the clip of, like, the little league kid that, like, jumps up to catch the ball and tries to frame the strike afterwards? It's like,
oh my God.
Viral video that was going around a couple of years ago.
Umpire, I'm borderline offended. I'm like, do you think I'm stupid? Like, I can't see that it's in the dirt. You know what I mean?
Right.
But he pissed me off. Like, just the whole aesthetics of him, I hated watching him. But obviously they're not trading for Ohtani because of the Angels are making this whole thing about keeping him. But are you just going to let Alvarez toil away in AAA for 2 years or a year and a half? Like, what's the point of that? Also, if he's going to learn how to catch at the major league level with Verlander, and if you're afraid of that, he's got to do it sometime.
Yeah.
The Mets are always going to have stars pitching now. Like, this is,
yes, they are.
This is what it is. Like, they spend $500 million dollars in offseason. They're going to fucking sign
all the greats. Scherzer, Verlander, Senga, David Peterson, all of the greats.
Jose Quintana. But Tyler McGill.
Quintana and Peterson are already hurt, so.
Yeah.
Peterson thing, it just seems like it's fine. But it's Quintana feels like left side stiffness, like we're going to see in June. So that's how that's going to go, yeah.
This week in Tyler McGill lives on forever.
Forever, yeah.
But he's going to, at some point, he's got to learn how to catch those guys, too. Like, he's got to, he's got to get at the major league level and have Scherzer get mad at him for a game. Like Bassett would get mad at McCann or whatever. That's life. The pitchers are going to do
There's
that.
There's more Patrick Muzyka, but yeah.
Yeah, but you know what I mean.
You know, like, yeah.
It feels like a weird mismanaging of Alvarez to me.
I mean, literally, unless you're Adley Rutschman, like level defender, this is something that every catching prospect has to go through, which is why catching prospects, you know, this is the idea behind like young catcher stagnation syndrome and stuff like that, right? You got to do so much stuff at the major league level that it can take some time.
I don't know. And it also felt like Alvarez learning that stuff in April made sense to me. Because if he is going to be fine,
the
then
thing
by
is he's not even really catching in spring, right? Like they're barely having him catch.
Barely played. Him and Parada have like 15 at bats combined, and it's all.
Which
like
again, I mean, Narvaez has to learn a new staff, so I get that to an extent. But
and is he playing in the World Baseball Classic and about to leave?
I don't know offhand.
I believe so. Yeah.
So
maybe we'll see more of Alvarez then. Yeah.
And Parada. Yeah. Which I'm assuming is what's going to happen. It's just. I don't know. It felt weird. There was something feels off about the way they handled catcher to me. Mm. And it makes me feel like we're not going to see Alvarez this year. And if we do, it'll be very late or if someone gets hurt.
Jared, how many games does Francisco Alvarez catch for the Mets this year?
Catch or play?
Catch. Well, you can do both. Catch and or play. Catch or play. Catch, but then catch and play. I don't know. However you want to.
I think 50 and 80 are probably the answer.
You really think that many?
Yeah.
Hmm. I don't know. The catchers get banged up, obviously. And
I could see them waiting till like the deadline, not the deadline, the All-Star break to bring him up.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it depends to an extent when he does a Triple A. But there's also like, who are you outside of Ohtani, who are you trading Francisco Alvarez for at this point?
No one.
Like, who are the best players that are going to be available at the deadline? It's going to be like Brian Reynolds again. The endless Brian Reynolds saga.
He's getting traded for Jason Dominguez.
Next year's free agent class isn't, like Jared already, we mentioned it, I think, either last week or before, like the second best position players, like either Teoscar Hernandez or Matt Chapman, both of whom are on competitive teams this year, so a moot point regardless, beyond the fact that they're Teoscar Hernandez and Matt Chapman. If they're trading for a pitcher at the deadline, because there will be some pitchers that like bigger things have gone wrong than the catching situation. So I mean there's always guys, I guess, you know, like the guys that are one plus and two plus trades. I haven't really looked at those those names yet, but he should still be a big enough piece to bring back a star level player. I mean, the first piece in a, you know, he would have been the first piece in a Juan Soto deal, right? That's what we're talking about here. Like, you're not trading him for Jesus Luzardo, as much as I like Jesus Luzardo.
And they've made a big thing about we're going to build through the farm and all that stuff. Yeah. And then, well, you got to play the guys to do that. Like, at some point, Beatty and Alvarez have to play, and I think Beatty has a legitimate.
Yes, but have you seen Ronnie Mauricio's spring training home run total, Thomas?
Oh, we had to talk. I had to talk about him on another podcast today.
Yeah.
So,
well, he's no longer leading the leading spring training in home runs because Jared Kelnick hit his fourth today.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. What I think was probably the straightest fastball I've ever seen in my life. It was Devin Williams, to be fair, who's obviously a.
Oh, the pitch was bad, though.
Pitch was not good. That's the thing. We were having that argument. Having that argument in Slack. He's like, I don't remember who it was. Like, he hit it off a...
Florio.
No, it was Vientos. It was one of Vientos.
Oh, Vientos.
Like,
no, it was Florio, wasn't it?
Didn't... was it Florio? I mean, yeah, but was it Florio? It was one of the Marlins, but he hit it off a good major league pitcher. Like, yeah, it was a fucking rolling curveball right into the halfie. Like, you'll see that in AAA plenty of times.
It was not a good pitch.
Not a good pitch. I don't care.
It was a good pitcher.
I don't care who threw it on March 4th or whatever. It was not a good pitch.
I mean, Senga threw an absolutely horrific pitch that was a home run too.
I mean, at least that was like up and out of this. Like, he covered it. Don't get me wrong. But Chase Pereira like smoked it. But it was like one of those. Yeah. I tried like a slow pitch softball swing, right? You just get at the top of the zone and just try to, yeah. I mean, it was atrocious. But yeah. But I mean, yeah, whatever. I don't care who's was throwing it. I mean, outside of the one that Alonzo hit one off like a good pitch today, which was good to see. But yeah, I don't care about spring training home runs. I know Jarrett doesn't, especially given who's leading right now.
I mean, yeah, it's just that it is what it is. Like, it's like, you know.
Yeah. The underlying issues with Jared Kelnick was not he couldn't hit a 94-mile-an-hour fastball down the deck, right?
Right, he crushes those pitches. Yeah.
I mean, anybody that's
always,
like a...
You always get these home runs, yeah. You know, where it looks super impressive because, you know...
All these pitchers, too, are still just working on stuff, right? Like, they're not...
Right. You get these in the regular season, too.
Yeah,
get,
sure. That's like Craig wrote a whole article about it. Got Yankees fans really mad at him. Like, the Aaron Judge only hits home runs, like, off middle
pitcher.
No,
I mean, specifically with Kelnick. So you always these, you know. And, you know, Mariners Twitter is extremely abnormal, so.
I was going to say they're extremely normal, Jarrett.
Yeah, so you get that side of it. Yeah. It's like just, it's a bad... It's like a bad
another month of this, yeah. That's why I'm watching college baseball. It's much better.
Yeah.
So much better.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
That's the catching preview. We don't fucking know what's going on with catcher.
Yeah.
Is there any other, like, spring training news of sorts? Obviously, Quintana got shelled in his first start, looked good today for an inning, and then left with left side tightness, which can be anything. It's going around.
Yeah, I mean...
Jacob DeGrom's had it for like 3 weeks. I'm sure that's fine.
I don't care that much about this.
Like, I mean, it could be anything, right? He's not going to pitch in the World Baseball Classic. Could be precautionary. Right. He'll sit for 2 weeks. It could be something more significant. We won't know until we know.
Right. Yeah, I mean, yeah. We'll know when we know.
Scherzer is out there just trolling everyone as much as possible.
Yeah.
With the pitch clock. Pretty.
Already got slapped by the league over it.
Yeah. He's got prospects in high A dunking on him on Twitter.
Yeah. Yeah, Robert Hassel should worry about, you know, lifting the ball ever.
In the words of Mendacious Marty, easy there, Fredericksburg.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. I just, like, can you imagine? Like, I don't know, whatever. I'm all for banter. I'm a big fan of Vander. You just imagine, like, literally Max Scherzer, buddy. Literally Max Scherzer.
I know.
Who's also a legend and World Series winner for the organization you are currently in. So I don't know how much Nats fans are going to back you here either.
Like, read the room just like a tap.
Yeah, read the room.
Just a little.
Yeah. As we said, Brett Beatty having a very good spring. Mark Vientos having a very good spring. Ronnie Mauricio having a very good spring. I'm sure we'll see more of them in the coming weeks with the entire Mets infield going to the World Baseball Classic, basically. I think that's really more or less about it. Pitching side, been fine.
Senga looked pretty good today.
Yeah, he looked, I knew he threw hard. I just wasn't nice. I didn't come out at like 96 to 98.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be like a he reaches back a little for that now, not
it's,
getting
it's
there.
It's like a pretty easy 96, 98, too.
Yeah, it looked easy. He was the control was just iffy.
Sure, whatever.
Again,
it's March
5th.
Yeah. No, yeah, of course. The forkball looked good.
I don't know how anybody like it's Jordan Walker's like just absolutely. I don't know how anybody's ever going to hit that pitch. I mean, the answer is like Arenado didn't swing at it, but like barely did.
Right.
Swing
at it. It's lay off. You're not going to hit it. It's going to put up these crazy, you know.
Yeah. With, but you also like, it looks, Jeff Ponce, who's down in the Palm Beach area.
Yeah.
And has been sitting on the Cardinals camp for a few days, like posted video of the pitch from behind and like, or from behind home plate. And man, it looks like it's just going to be right at your thighs.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know how, like, if you say don't lay off, I'd be like, two strikes, you got to protect. And it looks like the fucking fastball, it tunnels and then just good night. I mean, again, it has like something like a 47% whiff rate and MPB or whatever. So it's going to miss bats. But yeah. Yeah, no, Francisco Lindor, as always, having a great spring training. No surprise there. You know, Thomas, like Jeff McNeil beat out an infield single in the game today, like absolutely running. I ran it back, so I was curious. He popped a 4.06 for me, so like, my man,
sprinting,
like take Full it sprint. Easy,
like, buddy. It's barely March.
Recurring lower body
injuries. Doing like, both your hamstrings the first week of March is not great.
I don't know if you should.
Yeah.
Necessarily be doing that if you're him, but
yeah,
it's probably a this is how he got here type scenario.
No,
where,
I know, like, yeah, you can no, you sign the long term extension now, you can take it easy.
Yeah, you could relax. It was so funny, like he's running, and I'm like, don't get hurt, I don't even care if you're safe. It's like 7-1 in spring,
gotta get his hits, man.
He's hitting under 200 before
he
was
never hits in spring training. It's like, he's literally just gone up there. He's just going to swing at like every first or second pitch.
He bats like someone who doesn't like baseball and doesn't want to be up there.
Yeah.
He's like, I'd rather be golfing. Can I please just get this at bat over with as fast as possible?
I don't really have much else. Lorenzo Cedrola is playing every game, which is pretty funny. He had Abraham Almonte this spring too. He's looked good in a lot of states.
He has been, but it's so much Abraham Almonte.
It's a lot of Abraham Almonte.
I was thinking about this today, looking at their roster and who's pitching. I'm like, this is a boring ass spring training team.
Yeah, it's a brutally bad spring training team.
It's just I don't care. It's like all
the interesting prospects were already up last year to an extent, and
yeah,
we've been talking about them for. They've been in camp before. We've been talking about them forever. They have no interesting pitching prospects of like any stripe, and all their relievers are just like long-term veterans are like generic 40-man guys at about like it's like a lot of Jimmy Yacobonis and TJ McFarland and
yeah
like good AAA relief depth, right? Stuff they have not had in the past, but I just don't need to see TJ McFarland like working on a slider. It's not something I need.
And it's like, oh, the bench is coming in, and it's just I'm like, all right, cool. It's all these dudes who I will write about when they're at Syracuse for a million times this season, but I won't really care about. It's just a boring ass fucking spring training. It really is.
Right, I watched Dodgers Rangers really this week because it was Gavin Stone and Dustin May were pitching. It's good. But then the Dodgers had like, I mean, I know Miguel Alvarez can't swing, but you know, you got like Miguel Alvarez and Michael Busch, and the Rangers have like Evan Carter and Luis Angel Acuña, you know, guys that haven't been in camp before. It was just more interesting.
The only person I'm excited to see is Tim LoCastro, to be honest with you.
You might see a lot more Tim LoCastro in the coming months, because it does seem like he's a guy that...
He's absolutely going to be on the Mets for multiple weeks at a time. 100%.
Seems like a safe bet. Seems like a good bet now that it's time to take a break. It's an awful transition, but I don't care. We'll come back. I'll refill my drink. Go to the third half of the show. Welcome back. Now it's time for the third half of the show. Before we do the third half of the show, we do housekeeping. This is for all you kids out there, episode 399. For all you kids out there, is a Mets adjacent baseball prospectus podcast. You can find us on the internet at baseballprospectus.com. The podcast is on iTunes and various other non-iOS apps. Just search for all you kids out there and you listen or subscribe right there. I encourage you both. I also encourage you to rate and read the podcast. Want to get in contact with the show, we're on Twitter at For All You Kids. Jarrett's on Twitter at Jay Seidler. I'm on Twitter at Jeff Paternostro. We have a Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/ For All You Kids Out There. And you can email the show at allyoukids@baseballprospectus.com. So our next episode is our 400th episode of this show. That's too many shows. It's too many episodes. I am going to Scottsdale or the Phoenix area for spring training and WBC through next weekend. So on Wednesday night, I think we decided on roughly 8 p.m. Eastern time, we will do episode 400 of For All You Kids Out There, which in our inimitable way will be the Mets outfield preview.
Because of course it is.
Of course it is. With, as you might have guessed, David Roth of Defector. So what we're going to do, I will send out a Zoom link to everyone on our Patreon. Brady said, don't promote the Patreon enough. Where you can get a live look in. You get all the behind the scenes of the recording of episode 400. Ask us questions. I'll be literally leaving for Arizona the next morning. So I don't know how late I'm actually. I guess it's earlier for me, so it doesn't really matter. Go as late as I want. And yeah, we'll have a little fun with it. It's basically what we did for 300, which also seems like it was forever ago, but was also in the middle of a global pandemic. So, or towards the beginning of a global pandemic, to be fair. But for now, we'll wrap up 399 with your correspondence. And we have an email. It is from Matthew. Hi, Jeffrey and Jarrett. Hi, Jarrett and Jeffrey is how he actually wrote it, to be fair. You guys are the best. Hope you're doing well. I'm curious what you both think of Dylan Cease. I know what Jarrett thinks. And what are the Mets should trade for him? The whiff rate on his slider is the best among starting pitchers. I'm also curious what kind of players it would take for the White Sox to
trade. None that the Mets have. The Mets could not trade for Dylan Cease.
I think they probably could, right? Here's the underlying. Well, there are a couple of things going on, right? He is not a free agent, so he's 3+. So it's 3 years of Dylan Cease. He was second in the Cy Young voting last year, but that's really the only.
There's a non-zero argument that projecting 2023, he's the best pitcher in baseball.
Sure.
Like, I don't think I would say that, but you could make that argument. It's not.
There's also like the Robbie Ray conundrum where he's can very quickly go back to throwing out enough strikes to. I think he's better than Robbie Ray, obviously. I get what you're saying, but also I'm just saying.
So here's
the main problem.
Yeah, well, the main problem is that Dylan Cease has an 80 breaking ball and Robbie Ray has like a 55.
I mean, the main problem with trading for Dylan Cease is I have no fucking idea what the White Sox are doing.
Yeah, I mean, maybe.
But they are trying to win.
Alvarez, Beatty, and yeah, but like they're not going to guess.
Yeah,
I do not think the Mets have anything that they would take for Dylan Cease.
Again, I don't fucking know the White Sox.
Like Pete Alonso or something like that.
I get that, but also I'm trying to think like
that'd be a hilarious trade.
It would, wouldn't it?
Just like the optics of that.
Everybody
definitely need that. What the White Sox definitely need is another right-handed power hitting corner bat. We the best one they have, but
it would. That's like some 1950s ass trade, honestly.
Yeah, it is.
So I'm trying to think, like, if he was on like a more, let's say he was on the Reds, we might be more likely to trade him because they've literally traded all of their good pitchers in their pre-arb years or pre-free agent years, arb years, technically. This would be a better one to, I think it would be a better one to revisit after this season, right? Because they only have 2 years left. The White Sox implode again. They might be looking to
rebuild
again. Yeah, I mean they traded. No, there's literally Rick Hahn traded Chris Sale. So before you come in, he was a better pitcher at the time, or at least had a longer track record and by better pitcher at the time than Dylan Cease. So I don't think it's impossible. I think it's just probably too early in the process to make it happen, but.
Yeah, maybe
Mets,
that's.
I mean, Mets yeah. The Mets, if the Mets can swing a trade for Dylan Cease, they should probably swing a trade for Dylan Cease. Jared has also loved Dylan Cease since like his Cubs prospect days. So.
Yeah, he's really good, man.
He just never threw enough strikes until he did.
Yeah.
Jared's gonna say he never got enough chases until he did, but.
Yeah, because it's like again.
Yes, you're the. I can actually look at this. This is a thing that gets tracked by Baseball Savant. So we can see what the big difference with Dylan Cease was last year. I'm sure there's already been like multiple articles written on this at both like Baseball Perspective and Fangraphs as well as other places, right. But I don't remember any of them offhand.
I suspect there haven't been. So Dylan Cease's zone percentage from 2021 to 2022
went down from
46.7 to 47.2. It went up 0.5%.
Are you on Fangraphs? Because I'm on Savant and I have a different zone percentage.
Yeah, I'm using R.
You're using R. Oh, you're using the watch.
Here's the big difference.
Savant says it went from 47 to 44, by the way.
In
so, but yeah, 2020 functionally,
to 2021 to 2022, yep. His chase rate went from 22.2 to 28.9 to 31.5, which is,
that's pretty
close. You know, the hitter numbers, 31.5 is really bad for a hitter, so it's really good for a pitcher.
Right, and his chase contact went from 60.9 to 47.5 to 50. So
here's his zone contact is his zone contact was 85 in 2020, and now it's 79.
This ought to say his percentile, his whiff percentiles went 55, 40, 94, and 91 in the last 2 years.
Yeah.
He's
getting more chases, he's getting more whiffs. Yep. It's not that he's throwing more strikes, it's that he's throwing better strikes and he's getting more. When you throw better strikes, you get more chases, like 8 inches out of the strikes.
Well, Jeffrey, you asked what pitchers will be available at the deadline.
Mm-hmm. I don't think it'll be Dylan Cease. I don't know what's going to happen in the AL Central, but I don't think it'll be Dylan Cease.
It'll be Lucas Giolito.
I mean, he also, we'll just note, dude averages 97 on his fastball, and he throws his slider more than his fastball.
Yeah.
Because, as noted, it's a really good slider. I mean, he runs 23% whiff percent on his four seam, which is pretty damn high too.
Yeah,
he's a good pitcher. Breaking Dylan Cease, second in the Cy Young voting in the AL last year, pitched to a 2.2 ERA. Pretty good pitcher. Yeah,
you've heard it here first.
Mm-hmm. When I go to the Facebook group, I got a couple Facebook questions. It would be nice for them to have like a Cy Young quality pitcher under the age of 40. On the team at some point, or at least like I don't know, like DeGrom's not there anymore. I don't know how old DeGrom is nowadays, but we will go. Maybe it'll be David Peterson someday. Probably not though.
Okay.
It's Blade Tidwell, and you know it.
Everybody loves David Peterson lately. I'll dispense with this one quickly. Q for the P from Andy. Jeffrey, what's your opinion of Poker Face episode 4? So I have not watched Poker Face yet. I actually had this conversation with Jess in the car because we're going to watch. We have to watch Poker Face and Party Down are the two in our queue right now. And she's going to want to rewatch the first two seasons of Party Down, which fine. I haven't watched in a while myself. But for those of you who don't know, Poker Face episode 4 is one with John Darnielle of the Mountain Goats, which is why Andy specifically picked out that one. I've read the Pitchfork interview with John Darnielle about that episode. But if you also don't know, he goes way back with Ryan Johnson. Ryan Johnson actually shot his, it was like concert video per se, but like his full playing of Life of the World to Come, which is like him on a piano, which I think they released as like a DVD along with the album. I don't remember. It's been like almost 20 years now since that album came out. Jesus fucking Christ. Yeah, but I didn't know if Jess would want to watch it, but she's like actually super into it, which I guess kind of makes sense. I don't think he really did like those kind of, not procedurals. It's not really a procedural, but they're kind of like old school whodunits. So we will eventually watch Poker Face and I will have an opinion on episode 4. But as of right now, I do not. I don't know when that's going to be between the two of us traveling a bunch in the next month or so. We actually have to get a second chair for the living room. That's neither here nor there. I didn't actually dispense with that all that quickly, I suppose.
No, you did not.
Cue for the fee from Kyle. I'm sure this will go real fast too, Jarrett. Curious what you think the ceiling floor is for the big four. We're calling them the big four now. Of Alvarez, Beatty, yes. Mauricio, Vientos. Can you give player comps as well as their 50th and 75th percentile outcomes?
I saw somebody in the comments suggested that another prominent prospect writer.
Yes, I saw Mauricio that too.
To Alfonso Soriano, which is like the laziest fucking comp. I could think of.
It's hard to find dudes in the majors like had long careers with like 300-ish OBPs, right? Of that player.
Yeah,
type.
And Roddy Mauricio also visually looks exactly like Alfonso Soriano. Like, exactly. And that's
he's like bigger than Soriano now, I think.
Yeah, but it's he definitely body type. It's body type, it's race, it's looking, it's how how they look. That's visual comm. That's bad. That is bad. We need to get that out of the industry. Mm-hmm. And that's just that. You know,
didn't comp him to Kyle Tucker, who we came up with last week.
If you can't find a comp of a player that is a different race and a different look, you need to not be comping players. That's just that is what it is. If you can't find a different race, different look comp, you can't be making that comp. And if that person has a problem with it, he knows where to find me.
I did 2015 and 2017 last week. We'll do 2018 this week. Why not? There should be an easier way to do this, but
somebody brought up Wilmer Flores, also in the Facebook group for Mauricio, which was not.
That's a good outcome, honestly.
Right. That's you know, there's some defensive similarities. Yeah, I mean, I could. Marisol's got more swing and miss. Obviously, Flores didn't have the weak side switch hitter problem.
But he had platoon issues, obviously.
Obviously, platoon issues of a different. Yeah, I mean, that's not terrible. But again, it's a point I made about Eli De La Cruz last season. You know, there are just not a lot of players who have been successful major leaguers of this archetype. Now, Mets fans have been asking for a year why we think Eli De La Cruz can do it, and Roddy Mauricio can.
It's not that we think one can and one can't, per se.
I mean, it's
part of it. But the other thing is, like, the difference, and you've said this before, if Eli De La Cruz improves a little bit, he's a good major leaguer. Like a plus major leaguer.
Roddy Mauricio's not good enough.
Right.
Eli De La Cruz's bat speed, he doesn't have his body control, he doesn't have his foot speed, he doesn't have his defense. He doesn't, you know, they've got kind of vaguely similar, like, contact profiles, but and again,
I was curious because this is a comp you'll also never hear on Roddy Mauricio, but again, it might be kind of like a good major league outcome offensively. Ryan Mountcastle.
Yeah, that's an interesting one.
Do you know what Mountcastle hit in AA as a 21-year-old? 297, 341, 464.
Yeah.
Like, he
you know what Wilmer Flores hit?
Oh, he crushed double A. Yeah.
Yes.
I watched it.
311, 361, 494.
Yeah, no, he was really good at 20. Yeah. No, he was a really good deal.
That's the big difference.
Yeah, Mountcastle, I feel like, always hitting the minors. Why are you giving me game logs? Why is this site suddenly difficult to navigate? Minor leagues. There we go. Yeah, Mountcastle again. And Mountcastle was a similar age. I mean, obviously the pandemic year mucks with us a bit, but like every significant stop in full season ball, 281, 314, 397, 312. Like he never walked a ton, right? The double A year I just noted was actually his highest walk rate in the minors, although he's had like average-ish major league walk rates. He's just struck out a little too much, and unfortunately now plays in a stadium that was designed solely to spite him.
That stadium was designed to ruin his arbitration money. Like, it's just
so he literally.
I mean, it was designed to get Kyle Gibson to sign.
Oh, yeah,
yeah. You gotta get exactly.
Kyle Gibson. Like, so he hit 2021 7%. Walk rate, 27.5% K rate, 297 BABIP. 2022, 7.1% walk rate, 25.3% K rate, 303 BABIP. 2021 line, 255, 309, 487. 2022 line, 250, 305, 423. Sorry about the 60 points of slugging, kid.
Jeez. That's got to be frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, I think Mauricio is a better defender than Ryan Mountcastle, obviously.
Yeah, for now.
For now, sure.
You know, Ryan Mountcastle is a shortstop at this stage, too.
Yeah. I did the Eastern League. We'll do one more for fun. We will actually answer this question at some point. This is not going to be a recurring bit. I mean, this weekend, Ronnie Mauricio might be, but this specific. So the other thing, too, is like you can just like, you can find guys that weren't like, that's not fair to Mauricio. Shed Long didn't actually hit for a ton of power at that level. Like, Trent Grisham was downright bad in Double A. Trent Grisham also remade his swing to become a good major leaguer.
Is Trent Grisham a good major leaguer?
At times, he's been a good major leaguer. I grant the premise. Let's see. If I like 21-year-old, or I guess I can extend it to 22 for the purposes of this discussion. I mean, like, the short answer is, like, we wrote that, like, 70th percentile is just OFP, and I wrote him as like a everyday third baseman. So I just hit for enough power, won't have a particularly high on base percentage. You know, it'll hit something in that, and something in that Ryan Mountcastle range, right? 250, 300, 480. When he's playing in a, he won't be a particularly good defensive third baseman, but he'll be fine there. And like, look, I mean, Ryan Mountcastle, go back to his, navigate back to his page, has been, you know, Mountcastle for his career, 261, 315, 458. He's hit 60 home runs and a little over 1,300 plate appearances, a little more than two seasons worth of at bats. You know, it's like, I don't know what the 150 game average there would be, like 27 home runs or something. Like, again, you know, 12% better than the average, playing a below average, but fine third base is probably a, you know, probably a 2.5-1 player, 2.5-1 player. So roughly a roll five.
And for some reason, I always had Jay Bruce in my head when I think of Mauricio.
I don't know. Like, Jay Bruce hit for, Bruce was a little more 3-2 outcomes-y than.
But his career line is 244, 314, 467. That's a lot of, like, bad down years.
Yeah.
He was very front heavy with his career because he was really good for a few years. Like, there's a 4-year stretch where he was really good.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, like, his first couple of years, and he was still like playing center field and shit.
He was barely below league average and 0.8 F4 and 1.
He's one of those guys like you don't really like when he first, because you just remember like the dad bod Jay Bruce of the Mets years.
Yeah,
when he first came up, like he was like a 5-tool center fielder.
That's so funny to me.
But like, it's also part of the reason why, you know, he could still be a slugger in his
when he was 32.
You know, yeah, he's, you know how old Jay Bruce is now.
35.
I was going to say that's why he aged well, but he did not, in fact, actually age well.
He retired at 34 years old. Mm-hmm. After 10
bad games. He came up when he was really young, I think, which is part of the. I think it wasn't that. Yeah, but he came up at 21, but yeah. But yes, he, you know, he came up as like a 5-tool outfielder. Like, he never really stole a ton of bases, but he was reasonably
fast. He was
not a good center fielder. But yeah, I mean, I don't. It's like, again, I don't know if he'll post like those almost 10% walk rates, but.
But that's I'm talking about like.
So Jay Bruce was a.
Take this outcome.
Jay Bruce was a 21 player by F4. I don't know what he was by B4 offhand. I mean, I think it's probably going to be. I don't think there's going to be like a huge difference there, but maybe there is. Yeah, 20.4 and 19.9, so they're completely in agreement. Yeah, it's like, there's outside of maybe like the top five or six, you know, 5 to 10 prospects in baseball in any given year, depending on the year, you should always sign up for a 21 career, right? Like always, period.
Yeah.
And like Bruce himself was obviously a very, very good prospect. He went 12th overall. He would bet by both BP and Baseball America, he was the number one prospect in baseball before the 2008 season. So yes, he was a very, very good prospect. As long as we're comparing him to Ronnie Mauricio, his age 20 season between high A, double A, and triple A, he hit 319, 375, 587.
Yeah, that's the difference.
That's the difference, right? Like, it's not that guys don't get better. We talked about Trent Grisham. It's not that guys don't hit better in the majors than they do in the minors. Just generally speaking, prospects don't hit better in the majors than they did in the minors.
They do not.
His OBP double A started with a 2.
Yes, as Jarrett.
It was almost a three.
As Jarrett likes to point out repeatedly on this show,
it was almost a 3 because I'm pretty sure it's 298.
So that's the thing, right? You have to be able to give me a reason why you think you will get better. First, you have to be able to tell me what he needs to improve on, because you can't do that for starters. We're not gonna have a conversation. But then you have to tell me how that's going to happen.
And like, I don't know how to fix his problem, because it's swing decisions. Like, it's not his
and
swing
it's
from
not
the left.
Like,
on his line.
I don't think it's aggressiveness issue. I think it is legitimately a pitch recognition issue.
Yeah, maybe like wrong, he swings but... it at pitches he shouldn't.
Yes,
like that's it. And I don't know how you tell him to stop, you know?
It's anecdotal, but it's also there are some guys when they change. Like, I'm going to point out, like, Jordan Walker's swing against the Ghost Fork today. He tracked it fine. He just had no chance to hit it. He was tracking it and moving the bat towards it. When Ronnie Mauricio swings over a change, he puts the bat where he thinks the ball is going to be, and the ball is just not going to be there. Like, not even close, right? That's like a hand-eye thing.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, Walker tracked that pitch fine. He tracked the curve. Like, he probably should have done better on the curveball or the breaking ball before that. But he tracked it. He tracked it with the bat. He put the bat where he thought it was going to be, and he was close.
Was that the slider?
The slider, like, yeah. The pitch board. It was down enough that he couldn't quite get on it. But yeah, Mauricio just takes the same swing at every pitch, basically.
And if he hits it, he hits it.
If he hits it, he hits it. Yeah.
And sometimes when he hits it, it goes.
Yeah, it's an oversimplification. Like, his hand eye is not a 20; it's like a 40. But given everything else, he doesn't do well enough. That ends up having knock on effects the way it interacts with every other skill set. But I mean, look, if he can hit 260, 300, 470 like he did in double A, like, fine, he's going to play for a while. Like, I don't know how that skill set's going to. That's going to be a very, I think, variant skill set on sort of like how his contact profile plays. Like, so the going back to the original question, whatever that was, I vaguely remember. You get into problems with like the 50th percentile outcome for him, right?
Yeah.
Because Jarrett and I had this discussion last year when I saw him in AA. I'm like, how would I actually write this guy? Because when I'm writing a report, I'm writing essentially what I think the likely outcomes for each tool grade are. And like, I have to write him as like a 3 hit. And at that point, like,
yeah, what are you doing with him?
He doesn't have a ton of up the middle defensive value. Like, so what do you have to do as a via starter with a 3 hit tool in the majors?
Elite defense,
elite power, like Joey Gallo, right? So Joey
Gallo.
Yeah,
like if he was Joey Gallo, I'd be fine with it. But the thing is, he doesn't walk, so.
You know, Joey Gallo, yeah, Martin Maldonado.
Martin Maldonado.
He's a catcher too.
Yeah.
I mean, there are good So this is like the thing where you could plausibly have a three hit tool and still be a good player, but you have to have secondary skills. Like, you can't have a three hit tool and also not walk ever.
Right.
Like, there's secondary skill problems here.
And then it's also, he becomes a difficult bench fit in modern baseball, because what are you leveraging yeah. here? Like, maybe he can play a bunch of positions, right? But, and like, look, you can play him mostly against righties, I suppose. That's, you know, he could be alongside platoon, so you've got, he's got that going for him.
Right, so he's alongside platoon third baseman, so great. So if things go well, he's going to be a worse version of Brett Beattie.
Yeah. Man, I did not. This is his line against lefties last year. 226, 250, 376 with a 25-2 strikeout to walk ratio.
Yeah.
What was the OBP? 250?
250, yes, Thomas.
Oh, I know.
So that's like the. So
that
that's.
Hurts. That one, that hurts. That's
but that's like, a, that's like the three hit tool version, though, right? That's the problem.
I had a friend that works in baseball. Who I talk to. Like a ton.
Yeah.
Maybe like a guy I talk to every month or two.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, and I just get like these weird...
Anyway, the bench, I was gonna say the bench fit here is like,
no, this I'm making like this is okay. Related to Mauricio.
All right, no, I know. Okay.
The beginning of the 2021 season, he's on Mauricio in high A,
mm-hmm.
and he's just like, this guy needs to stop switch hitting like mm-hmm. immediately. Like,
no, it's bad.
He can't hit from the right side at this point. At that point, that wasn't really the book I'm reading. I'm just like, all right, man. Like, I'll...
Now, 20... Like, if I call 20...
Two weeks later, I saw him in Lakewood, and it's just like, holy shit.
Like, I feel like, if I recall correctly...
right-handed swing is just a disaster.
In 2019,
and his splits
like...
were fine at that point.
Right. If I recall early in, like, 2019, it felt like he was just trying to stay afloat, and he had more power from the right side at that point. It was yeah. his natural side, so it kind of got washed out. And he was just trying to make contact, you know, as a 19-year-old in full swing.
But my point 18, was but... that this is somebody that I didn't, somebody that I don't talk to that often felt the need to reach out to me to dump on Roddy Mauricio's right-handed swing, like, before this was, like, a public thing.
I was going to say, like, the 50th percentile outcome, like, the, you want to find like the bench version or the three hit tool version. I'd be like Edwin Rios
keeps like ending up on waivers.
I know, that's my point,
right? That's a
he's actually been
players he's, who, right all
he's
the
been
players
an above who, average major league hitter, but it's,
the
a, it's
success,
weird small samples. Yeah,
the success stories for Roddy Mauricio stink.
Mm.
They're bad. They're all bad players.
As we covered last week, yes.
Right.
Or 2 weeks ago, whatever it was.
Every comparable to Roddy Mauricio that you can find.
Because, like, again, this is a, you know, Baseball America writes this article once a year. Like, what do major leaguers do at each level of the minors? And, you know, broadly speaking, major leaguers don't post OBPs that start with two and double A.
Yeah.
All right. That's Roddy Mauricio. That's this week in Roddy Mauricio.
We never actually answered this question.
No, I'm coming back. I answered the Roddy Mauricio part of it. I'm now going back to the other three players. The first half didn't run that long. We're fine. Yeah, I don't care. I'm not going to look at the clock. Brett Beattie, I will actually say I don't move a lot off spring training stuff. Brett Beattie has assuaged some of my concerns. Him doing that was like I think baked into keeping him where he did on the 2023 list.
Yeah,
but I've always kind of been like, I kind of get why you want to play Escobar there for a team that wants to be competitive this year. I still don't think he's gonna be a great defender at third, but just watching him, like, man, dude's 23. Just play him at third base.
Yeah,
you know, the 75th percentile outcome. He was like the first roll six for us. So he's like a good roll six that makes a few All Star games.
Yeah, they need to suck that one up.
I think it's like, man. Yeah, it's gonna be like, 77% of David Wright or something like that at the plate.
Yeah.
Which would be like 270, 350. I think he'll actually get to the power. So like 270, 350, 480, something like that.
I'm like, there's upside past this. There's upside.
No, I mean, yeah, if it all comes together, yeah, I might be low on the hit tool there, right? Like, would you be shocked if he hits like 300 at some point?
I wouldn't.
I know you wouldn't. Yeah. You wanted to write him as a 7 hit, if I recall correctly.
Not going to remember.
Six hit, six seven power. Seven
power. Yeah, which...
But I mean, six hit guys hit 300. Six hit guys will hit 300.
At the time, if I recall correctly, you would have been more comfortable with a 7 hit, 6 power. But...
I don't remember, but that might be right. Maybe I'm conflating our two opinions there. But yeah, I think, yeah, outside key. Yeah, like you said, you want to talk about upside. There are some high. I have a mutual friend of ours, Jarrett, that keeps comping him to Will Clark. So.
Yeah, Will Clark, but yeah, Will Clark, but
Will Clark's like a
third baseman would be a Hall of Fame player. Yeah, so.
Yeah, for real.
Yeah, Will Clark for his career hit 303, 384, 497. Yeah. I mean, you could argue
That's like the second best hitter on the team.
I mean, you could argue that like Will Clark should be in the Hall of Fame. Like, he also did not have he had durability issues basically in his 30s. He didn't really achieve the kind of counting stats that, you know, he doesn't have 300 home runs. He only has 2,100 hits. And he kind of stopped making All-Star games after his A3C. He never really hit for the kind of power. He's kind of like the John Olerud, Keith Hernandez problem, and he wasn't as good a defender as those two. But yeah, I mean, again, as a bad third baseman, it's a Hall of Famer. So there's your upside. Yeah, I mean, 75th, I think we're probably in the still play, like in the 270, 350, 480, makes a couple All-Star games. You know, 50th is just like a nice regular, right? Like, a nice regular at third base. It's not a particularly good defender right now.
And I know why Mauricio and Beatty get mixed up together because of the way the Mets system is and everything, but the conversations around
them play together a bunch too. Yeah.
It could just not be any more different because we're talking about, oh yeah, Beatty's 50th percentile outcome is a good regular.
A good regular. Yeah.
It's so
a nice player. Yeah.
Yeah, like a solid player. And it's like, damn.
So the other thing is like, the problem with like the high end stuff is like, the high end contact stuff from Mauricio isn't actually better than Beatty's.
No, that's the thing. Beatty has just lapped him. Yeah. Like far and away has lapped him. And he did last year. And he probably did a little before that. Like, I don't know. Beatty should just be on the team also, so we could figure out what his percentile outcomes are going to be.
Mark Vientos is in here apparently, so we'll do Mark Vientos next. Yeah, I mean, again, it's like the 75th percentile outcome, the good outcome here is functionally JD Davis.
Yeah. Oh boy, that's going to really upset people.
I mean, it's not the first time we've said it on the show. And like, again, JD Davis is a well above average major league hitter.
Yeah.
He's kind of taken a weird route to get there. He can't see same side pitching, and he can't really play defense.
There are smart people that think that you bet on the guys that make damage on contact, if everything else is bad. Vientos is that guy.
Yeah. I mean, look, we can joke about how bad the pitch was that he hit. But he hit it a long way, right?
Right.
Like, that was not a cheapie.
You know, his zone contact rate's horrid. Is that fixing?
There are teams that can fix it. Are the Mets one of them? I mean, the ultimate problem with Vientos functionally, and again, we get in this, so this has come up in the group DM recently. It sounds like we hate these dudes as prospects. We don't.
No, I like Vientos.
We just rank them like 3 spots lower on team lists than other sources. That doesn't actually matter. Right. So you look at like Davis in 2022 was 92 average exit, 113 max. That's high end damage on contact.
Yeah.
And his zone contact, I think, as we've discussed before, when literally discussing players with bad zone contact, his zone contact is brutal. Like, how many times, Thomas, how many times have you seen JD Davis swing through 95 mile an hour fastballs slightly above his waist?
Just so many.
And that's going to happen with Vientos, too. And if you do enough damage, like, it doesn't really matter, but it's tough, right? So his career zone contact is 73%. If Vientos can get to that, he will have a nice major league career, right? You know, Davis is gotten six seasons in the majors now. Like, he's going to get to free agency and probably get a free agent contract of some sort. That's a really good outcome.
I would sign up for that outcome right now.
Yeah, even for like a supplemental first round pick. You know, Davis himself was a third round pick. Like, he went 75th overall. He didn't go that much later than Vientos did. But it's just like, again, it's hard to find high end outcomes for, you know, the Mets are already playing Vientos at first base a fair bit.
Can't really play the outfield.
Can't really play the outfield. So, again,
he needs a DH.
And the Mets don't really have, you know, Pete Alonso is going to be hopefully the first baseman there for a long time. So there's not really a spot there. You know, the DH outcome here is, again, like, look, can he, would I rather have Mark Vientos as the right-handed DH than Darren Ruff in 2023? Yeah, probably. But, you know, that's not the biggest bar to get over. How the JD Davis had a second percentile whiff percentage in 2022, which I guess what happened with your zone contact starts with a six. So 67.5. Jesus. I mean, it feels right, to be honest. So I can't really say anything there. Like, what's the, you know, and all the problems in terms of like the 50th percentile out. Come for Mauricio, apply even more to Vientos because he has less defensive value. It's a short side platoon. I'm trying to think of like a high end Mark Vientos outcome, which again, you run into the problem of.
Again, there isn't one. That's
because
they,
it's tough when you have a 70, when you're talking about like 70, low 70s on zone contact. It's hard to.
Yeah.
To find like a super.
Chris Taylor, but a first baseman.
Yeah, like, it's not that exciting, right?
Right.
Without a, like, I mean, the high-end outcome is there's a major swing change here, which you cannot project as a professional prospect prognosticator.
I mean, you can.
That's the thing you can do. That's true. But it's not something you should do. It's not something we endorse. Which just leaves us with Francisco Alvarez. And there's some fun high-end outcomes here, right?
Yeah, sure.
Like, he could end up looking a lot like Will Smith. I don't know if he's as good a defender as Will Smith, but Will Smith also, like, is, what, a 55 defender at catcher, probably?
Yeah.
That feels broadly attainable if you have a good player development system. That's something I can check fairly quickly. Yeah, so it's, you know, he's probably a little better than the 55. His framing runs were plus three in 2019, minus three in 2020, plus six in 2021, plus six in 2022. I don't know if Alvarez is getting there, but.
Yeah, that's a real good defender.
That's a real good defender. Yeah. But his career line is 261, 356, 501 as a hitter.
What is that for the, like, what is his OPS plus or?
It's like 25% better than league average.
Okay.
Which is a catcher. And like, look, he's been one of the best catchers in baseball the last couple of years. That's a top, like, Will Smith's the top, what, three or four catcher in baseball right now.
Yeah.
And I think that's like a 75th percentile outcome or something like that.
Yeah, like the upside is he's the best catcher in baseball.
Yeah, I mean, the upside, like, yeah, the upside or something like, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, he's probably got more raw power than Will Smith, who does hit the ball very hard, mind you. But I don't know how much far. I actually, weirdly enough, I've only seen, he hasn't played much this spring. I've been more impressed with his at-bats than Ronnie Mauricio's. Because, like, the specific thing I was looking for with Alvarez was, like, he's not trying to pull the sliders and changeups off the plate 400 feet in the air. He's just not swinging at them. Which, if he can make that change and actually start zoning a little more, I think there could be some high-end offensive upsides there. I don't know if he's going to get there, but I think that's, like, the... Because with Alvarez, contra to Mauricio, it's always an aggressive. He just thinks he can hit everything. And if you make a mistake, it's going to go a long way. But it's not that he doesn't know that isn't a changeup on the outer half that he should let go. It's that he's like, fuck it, I'm going to... This is like the Bo Bichette problem, which I wrote in a baseball protectionist piece at the beginning of 2022. Like, and Bo Bichette made enough of those adjustments, right? So I guess the high-end outcome is Bo Bichette, but a catcher. Would you take that, Thomas?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think I could sign up for that. But yeah, honestly...
And Bichette, like, doesn't walk much, right?
He's not he doesn't.
But career 297, 340, 491. And I think he'll hit for more power than Bichette if he makes that adjustment. So.
Well, yeah, he's just... I think he has more raw power, definitely. So getting that into games, if he's making those adjustments, makes sense. And then you're putting it, you also, I don't want to scale it for his position, but then you're putting that at catcher.
Right. I think a 75th percentile outcome is something like Will Smith, and his high-end outcome upsize, I think Bo Bichette as a catcher is 50th. Again, this gets tricky because
his, that's when you start getting into, he's not a catcher.
He's not a catcher, right.
It's tricky. And then that's a good, he'll probably still hit. The thing is, like, I don't think he'll hit. It'll be one of those things where he's probably good but disappointing if he's not a catcher, just because.
So if we did not think he was a catcher, Jarrett, I guess this is a question for you because you're in the room.
Yeah. I mean, we kind of had this discussion.
I'm going to make a specific point here. Would you still rank him ahead of Tyler Soderstrom?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, but that's like more the range of what we're talking about as a prospect, at least.
Yeah.
And that's a different conversation. It's not a radically different one, but
we did have this conversation. Yeah. Just because, you know, there was some concern because the injury.
I guess that's going to have to play out the way it plays out. But
right, there was a little bit of concern, and we kind of came to the conclusion that he'd still be like a 50
sort of why he ranks
guy.
You know, fourth instead of second, basically.
But that was kind of the. That was kind of the conclusion we came to, was he'd still be very good. He wouldn't be elite, but he'd still be very good, yeah.
Is there anything else we've missed? I think we had to lefty one last week. Oh, for my six. When did I post that? Six, okay, so yeah, I'm just seeing that. Anything else there? The wrestling portion of the show is like AEW Revolution is going on while we record this. So
obviously none of us are watching.
That's
it,
where it says something probably. I've heard it's very good.
Yeah, the fact
according
that
to the Discord,
this,
the Discord says
the
it's
fact
very
that
good.
We didn't move this podcast is probably a sign on kind of where we are on AEW at the moment.
So yeah, that's 399 episodes in the book of this this silly little Mets podcast, Mets adjacent podcast.
Gotta get your line right there.
Yeah, I know. I don't think I even said that on the first episode. That came in later, but because originally it was the BP Mets podcast, if I recall correctly.
Yes, it was.
It's been a long 7 years for all of us.
Yes, I think we're the only surviving local podcast at this point.
We are, technically speaking. Our former editor has gone on to bigger and better things, at least.
Yeah. Which one?
Fair enough.
I actually did Brian's podcast. I don't think it's out yet, but he just started a podcast for Down on the Farm. So either the episode that I did of that is out, or it will be out shortly.
There you go. We should plug our own work more, probably. I haven't done anything else. Am I doing anything else? I haven't done anything else. What I will be doing is episode 400 of For All You Kids Out There. Next week. This week? That's going to be this week. It'll just be another edition of For All You Kids Out There.